was, and it told me that a power couple is a term used to describe a romantic partnership or marriage between two individuals who are both successful and influential in their respective fields. They're often recognized for their achievements and their status, and they use their combined talents and resources to achieve even greater success together. They are typically driven, ambitious, and work very hard to balance their personal and professional lives while also supporting each other's goals and aspirations. You're listening to Feel Free to Deviate, the podcast about people, their careers, and their relationships with success. My name is Jim Turbert, and I'm the host. Episode 46 of Feel Free to Deviate features architectural power couple Valentina Fantini and Giulio Margheri. Both of them work for Dutch architecture firms and have their own career trajectories. Our conversation touches on the dynamic of being a power couple. They share their experience of how they ended up working for their current firms and how their relationship evolved with their careers over the years. The conversation provides insight into the world of architecture and what it's like to work for well-known firms like MVR DV and OMA without sacrificing personal relationships. We also have a fun little chat about architects and buildings near the end, so make sure you listen to the whole thing. Please get comfortable or settle into whatever you're doing. This is my conversation with Valentina and Giulio. This is the first time I've had a couple.
Okay.
On the show. And the whole idea was that I wanted to have power couples. And I know that whenever I say that, people are like, oh, they feel a little bit uncomfortable about being referred to as a power couple. And I don't even know if that's what you are or what the actual definition of power couple are. But you both work in the same industry, and you work for fancy firms, and you're young and ambitious, or you seem to, I mean, that's my perception at least. My perception is that you are young and ambitious. What I normally do is I ask people to introduce themselves in the beginning. So maybe you could do that now.
So hi, I'm Valentina Fantini. I am 35. I'm Italian. Born and raised in Florence, studied architecture in Florence, then moved abroad in different places. Well, one of the main parts of my career was in England, where I studied also a postgrad, where I became architect there. And it was quite important step. And then I moved to the Netherlands with Giulio. I moved to be with him and invest a little bit more in design, because I felt that the management part that I did in England was becoming a little bit maybe too much. And I needed a little bit more the creative side of architecture. And this is one of the best places to be in that sense.
Solid. That's a solid introduction.
Exactly. You forgot the name of the parents.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Fantini. No, that's a good introduction. But like when you're out and about, you say you're at a party and someone says, what do you do for a living? I assume this is pretty cut and dry with both of you, because there's a simple answer that just covers it. And you can just say,
well, we are architect.
There you go. Yeah.
We do architecture.
What about you?
I also say that I'm an architect.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I'm Giulio. I'm the other part of the couple here. I'm not sure if you really reflect in that definition of power couple, but it's, yeah, I think it's fun to hear at least.
Well, just own it.
I think there are other strengths in that definition maybe of the couple, but yeah, I'm graduated in architecture. I've been, traveling and living around, mostly related to work or to study architecture or to do experience around architecture or the kind of industry. And then I live in Rotterdam since 2015. So it's a while now.
When I lived in Boston, I worked at a school called Wellesley, and it's a fancy school and lots of fancy people go there, and they have a nice, a good art and architecture department. While I was at Wellesley, I supported the art history department, so I was in lectures constantly. So I learned a little bit more about architecture and contemporary architecture, and I had to do AV support for visiting artists, many of whom were architects. So I learned a little bit about this stuff, and I know that both of you guys work for pretty fancy architects. And Rotterdam is an architectural hub.
Yeah.
For lots of reasons. And I assume that that's why you came here, or?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's quite fun because we traveled together here years ago before moving to the Netherlands. We were traveling with friends. We had a camper caravan and we were kind of moving.
We slept in Blijdorp, in
around
the campsite in
nice.
Blijdorp.
And moving around the Dutch cities. And of course, we came here mostly to sort of look around for weird architecture and kind of get to see what was happening and then get to see a lot of the buildings that maybe we had studied in school and we were curious to see. I think we're like in our third year at uni or fourth. And then we kind of, I mean, it was a shitty weather. We had all to buy kind of new jackets because we were, of course, like unequipped and whatever. But still, there was a certain fascination with the idea. It would be cool to live in the Netherlands at some point.
And we were saying it would be cool to live in Rotterdam because we had this ideas of being a big city and a bit of a metropolis. And it was the only one we'd seen in the whole trip, which it was a little bit out of the maybe the Dutch schemes in that sense, but also having a little bit of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we were very fascinated. And when we graduated, we tried. I mean, we tried, we applied here. But I mean, I applied and it did not work out, to be honest, because it was 2012. I think there was a bit of a crisis. And in our profession, now it's changed a little bit, but Well, you would work for free and you would apply offering your service, especially coming from Italy, maybe not the most appealing country, knowing that people did not get paid for their work in that sense. So at that time, did not work out. So we moved abroad, but in different locations. And Giulio went his own way, more explorative of the East and Russia.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because after graduation, I mean, there was this kind of idea, but there was before of the Netherlands, but then we ended up then moving here after various detours and without that specific plan in mind. I think it was kind of an idea and we thought it back then and then we started doing something else. But then after my graduation, I won a scholarship, in this institute in Moscow, which is called Strelka. It's an institute for architecture, media and design. So you get sort of hired because they support you economically.
Sure.
But on the other hand, it's a sort of a postgraduate kind of a year. And then, so then after uni, then I end up going there and I started doing something else. And then we were already together, of course. And then you at that time, you went to UK, no?
Yeah. I was in England when you were in Russia. Well, we almost left Italy at the same time. So he left to Russia in January and maybe February I went to England. Then we met. You were there for 1 year and the Strelka program at that time. Yeah, 10 months. Yeah.
But anyway. So and then we moved around. Then we did other stuff. And then because of other work that I was doing, then I got in contact with the environment of OMA. And then I got pretty much hired before coming here. So when I came to the Netherlands, there was it was already with the goal of kind of working in the office. So let's say we never really ended up being here looking for something to do. It just happened that when I arrived, Vale was living in UK, but then I started working at OMA.
Did they know who you were because of this connection with the Russian place?
No. I mean, when I was in Moscow, I worked on different projects. And then among the projects that I work, I kind of started collaborating with a German kind of film director and kind of a cultural advisor. And then we did some projects together. One among the projects that we collaborated together, one of the projects was inside Venice Biennale.
Ah.
And then because I was the only Italian in the team, then I got to stay in Venice for pretty much a month for the installation, kind of for the supervision and everything. And then was 2014, and then was the year when OMA was curating the Venice Biennale.
Okay. I didn't realize that was a thing.
I was there just as a... Yeah, just collaborating with a different party, but the overarching kind of structure was kind of a lot of OMA people. And that's where I got to know some of the person that then a few months after became my colleagues.
Networking. At the Biennale.
Yes, it was very sweet. I had my interview in Venice in a bar.
Super cool.
No, the thing is, they say it, no? And yeah. then the opening day, people go mainly for that reason. Like, well, I don't know, something would happen. But it does not happen that easily, to be honest. Unless he
unless
there...
you're him.
No, unless, I mean, he was there for a thing that it was going right. well. I mean, you know, then you have something to talk about and mm-hmm. it's a different situation. It's not sure. like you go to Biennale, the opening, then by accident you get an interview.
You just accidentally bump into this
it doesn't really happen
company.
Like that. I mean, I know only Giulio, actually, that happened.
Well, it was kind of very informal and very easygoing. And then, from there, yeah, there was the plan that when the Biennale would have finished and I would have finished the project that I was working on, then I would have come to the Netherlands.
And you had 15 days with me in Birmingham. And because he said, yeah, I'm going to come and visit you. At the end, he was just looking for a place to stay for a little longer.
Oh, snap.
and he stayed with me and he was like, oh, cool. So maybe you're planning to move here. We just live a little bit longer in the UK. And he was like, yeah, well, you know, I got this opportunity. He's like, okay, great. So yeah, and then he moved, but I stayed in England a little bit longer. He was 2 months.
A month, not 15 days, I think. But yeah.
Yeah. See, even longer, bumping the house.
That's one of the things that I'm interested in this whole power couple dynamic is that you both have solid careers and it's nice that they sort of harmoniously blend into this place and time in Rotterdam. Before we get into that, how did you end up working for MV RDV?
I moved here. So he moved first and I moved here. And I was looking to get an opportunity in one of these big firms because that's what I'd never done before. Yeah. And I wanted to see how design would work in this firm. And they work internationally. So I was very interested in this. There's not only MV RDV. Of course, there's many others that they work in different countries and they're based here. So I applied and I did not get a job initially. And I worked for another company, which it was a very good experience for me, mm-hmm. and it's in Rotterdam. Very small, actually, the opposite of what I initially...
Which one is that?
City Foster, it's called. And he's with a German director, and his name is Martin Sobota. And it's a small firm, but it gave me the opportunity to be, project leader of mm-hmm. big projects in Albania.
Ah, okay, nice.
And Albania, as a Mediterranean country, has a lot of similarity with Italy somehow. And mm-hmm. then I was very organized coming from England. And I mean, I spent 2 years there and it was very good. And at that time, politics kind of kicks in because Edi Rama is still the president of Albania. And he's the one who's kind of creating this network of big architects designing for him. And Winnie Mass is one of them. So also MV RDV had projects in Albania. And knowing people in the network of architects in Rotterdam, I said, guys, I'm very experienced now. I'm quite good. I can do projects in Albania for you. And I know that you have this beautiful project, which is now in construction. And I really, really would love to work for you and do this. So my friend put my portfolio through and I got an interview.
Excellent.
But I never done any Albanian project. That's also the other side of it. Since I joined MVRDV, I think I barely worked on a few drawings for Albanian project. And that was it.
So what are you working on generally over there?
I was involved for a very long time in Asian projects. Then I moved to more the Dutch scene. And I've done some kind of big size projects in the Netherlands, different stages. And now I'm again in Asia. I'm doing projects in Taiwan at the moment. Mm-hmm. Some acquisitions and trying to get something in the UK market also because of my experience. So yeah, a bit of everything. I'm not, Giulio will tell his story, but I'm not that focused in that sense. Mm-hmm. I do a certain scale and whatever it happens to be, I'm involved and that's okay. Asia, I've worked on it for quite some time now, I would say. And I'm hoping for UK because I have quite a strong expertise in that.
That's very cool. I just think it's great that you are focused on these types of careers and you go out and get them. Like, and I don't know that my listeners, I know that some of them know what OMA is and I know that some of them know what MV RDV is and some of them are familiar with Rotterdam and what architecture means to Rotterdam. But OMA is probably the most well-known architecture firm in the world, perhaps. I feel like half the cities in America probably have a library built by OMA, and MV RDV makes these wonderfully, it's a different vibe, It's a distinctly different vibe, but they have a huge number of projects and they're incredibly fun. Like just in Rotterdam alone, we have these two landmark buildings that are remarkable. And whether you like them architecturally or not, they are tourist magnets. And the same, I don't know, is like the Rotterdam or the City Hall, is that a tourist? It's not really a tourist magnet, but they're really great buildings. You know, like these are premier architecture firms and you get to work for them and be around this stuff. All the projects seem like they're pretty great. Like when you go to work, does it just feel like I'm just going to work? Or are you like, I'm working on this cool thing?
Well, I can answer that. OMA stands for Office for Metropolitan Architecture, and it's an office founded by Rem Koolhaas and a few other architects back in the days. It's been founded since the beginning in Rotterdam, so it's a Dutch firm. And then in time, it kind of grew and became an international firm that operate globally. So there is now the headquarters is in Rotterdam. Now it's a partnership. There are like more partners, but the majority of them sit in the headquarters in Rotterdam. But then there is about 200 architects or 200 person. And then there is another office in New York, and then there is also another office in Hong Kong. And then there is a lot of small, let's say, satellite offices that are most related to projects. And then, the office is well known for kind of big architectural project like CCTV Tower in China or the Seattle Library that you were mentioning in Seattle. I think that's the only library that there is in the American
really?
Cities.
That's the only one that I've actually been in.
Exactly.
But it's awesome.
I don't think there are so many around, but yes.
No, but they built, he builds everywhere. They build everywhere.
There is the kind of, that's right. When it became global, I think they kind of start operating everywhere. And then later in time, OMA also kind of founded this other entity that is called AMO, which is kind of the mirror image of OMA, which it doesn't really stand for anything. It's just the mirror image of that. And is it an entity that kind of allowed the office to sort of work on projects which are not strictly architectural, but they are tangent to architecture.
Okay.
So like more branding, but also temporary installations, publications, videos, books. So it's kind of quite diverse. So it really became also, it goes often kind of described as the think tank of the office, but it's really an entity that allowed to do more things also within an architectural infrastructure of an office.
Do you have an introduction for MVRDV?
Yeah. So MVRDV, the acronym stands, it's the surname of the founding partner, which are three, Vinnie Maas, Nathalie De Vrie, and Jacob van Rijs. Nathalie and Jacob, they are actually a couple.
Would you say that they're a power couple?
They are a power couple. Pretty cool people, I must say. Yeah. They opened in the 90s, I think 93, a very Dutch firm. They worked on several very interesting buildings over the world, but I think initially they were very popular for a series of building done in the Netherlands, actually during the crisis, because they were really cutting edge on design and having these bold ideas. Three young architects, pretty smart, working. They worked before in different firms, including OMA. And then after, I think, in the last 10 years, 15 years, the office really boomed. 300 employees, office in Rotterdam, Berlin, New York, Paris, and Shanghai, and working in all of these places. And I think France and Germany, we actually lead architect and principal architect, so they sign projects and they speak the language. And
it's localized.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yes, as you said, bold design, cutting edge, tourist magnet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's fun. I feel like that most of their stuff, I mean, at least the stuff that they put on the posters they make books about is fun. I'm sure that they probably do boring stuff too. Just, you know,
they try not to. I must say that growing so much as an office for three architects, it's been for them, I think, it's still an experience that they're trying to embrace and figure out the way and how, what they want to be when they grow up. I think that's also a little bit of the stage of the office compared to maybe OMA, which is a little bit more established in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, pretty challenging architecture in that sense.
Yeah.
As you said, not all the projects, but I think they're really pushing the edges and trying very hard in the office. Yeah.
Is it exciting to go there? I mean, it seems like it would be pretty cool to know that you're working on like cool stuff.
It is. It's exciting to work there, but not every day, I must say.
Yeah, I mean, it's a job.
Yeah. It depends. It really depends. But it is exciting. I mean, sometimes you get to work on projects. I mean, in the 5 years I've been there, I got to work on projects that I would never imagine. And I think it was a fantastic opportunity right. in that sense. But you have days that is like, oh, wow, this I really don't believe in it. Because you also have to believe in the effort that they ask you. And right. the pressure you have on, you really have to want to do it. It's not a place where you can just go and sit 8 hours and, you know, it's fine, whatever, and
then
you leave.
Do, so I think you
it's very hard in that sense. You've been asked to do a little bit more. I mean, Julio does a lot more.
Don't speak about me.
I mean, you said that he does more. That's sort of my point about the what do you tell people that you do when you introduce yourself at a party. You say you're an architect, but that's a super generalized term, architect. Yes, you work in architecture. I mean, there are architects who solely build schools. There are architects who just make Burger Kings. And, you know, he has a specialty and you have a specialty. Maybe you're at a different spot, but there are lots of links in the chain along the way. So I'm getting the impression that you have some sort of a goal.
Mm-hmm.
That you're striving for something and you defer to him as if he's already reached his goal. and I understand that because I already know what you guys do. And I think that the general public would say that he has a glamorous job. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we'll get to that. But but yeah. So what is your current role and do you have a goal in mind?
Well, this is a complicated question. What my role at the moment in the office is leading these projects. Of course, in terms of goal in the office is to become more and more independent and have more responsibility all right. the time on the projects. Because, of course, I follow and I match MVADV ideas in many points. But in others, I also want to bring my own. So in that sense, it's nice when you start leading your own projects and you grow up within the office leading in the way you want to.
Yeah.
So I think that's general goal in the office. But then, of course, you also have to go with a little bit the hierarchy,
mm-hmm.
the step and the structure, because it is a super structured office.
I can imagine.
So, yeah.
But also, it's hard for me to bring this up, but as a woman working in architecture, I would imagine that it's extra, extra hard.
Super challenging.
For you. Now you're opening
now
up.
Now you're opening up.
I'm going to leave.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. One time, one of Marlene's old bosses actually said to her, it's a man's world.
It is.
And it is a man's world.
So
do you constantly feel like you're just kicking against the pricks, as it were?
You have to fight hard this. I mean, I totally agree with this. It is a man's world. And it's, it's very hard. You have to prove much more. Your answer is never good enough.
Yeah.
But that's in general. I mean, it's in design. Whether you talk about construction site and expertise on construction site, which I disagree, but I can associate with a little bit of a man job.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I disagree, as I said. But okay, let's keep that at least. But in design, I mean, it's a fight. It's a constant fight.
Right.
And it's yeah, I mean, it's today we had this conversation when we were biking home. So we met a very interesting character and we had a chit chat. And actually, I was the one initiating the conversation because I'm spontaneously sociable person. So I said, well, what you're doing is very cool. And I showed appreciation. But then after a while and we discussed our job, what we do, our field, the guy was completely focused on Giulio. I mean, it's part of the generation, which is just beliefs in men and architecture. And I mean, I wasn't that interesting for him. And it doesn't matter what I say and where I work. It's just that's what it is. And so we discussed it and we have this talk quite openly. And when Giulio knows about it, and when we have also people come into our house to do some little work,
mm-hmm.
they have to listen to me.
Right.
So if I don't see them listening to me, they're out. Because uh-huh. I know they would listen to Giulio
right.
if there's any issues.
But Giulio doesn't know things. So.
But Giulio also knows. But it's an emergency plan, right? It's like, I know that he can raise his voice and we're going to get it done. But let's start first with me.
Right.
Listening to me calmly and get it done. And then if it doesn't work, I know where to go, but I don't like that. Yeah.
I hear you. We have it because we're dealing with our bathroom right now. And like the guys are all talking to me. I'm like, first of all, Marlene drew the plans. She knows the stuff. Aesthetically, she has a vision. I just want the toilet to work. You know, I mean, it's not that I don't care, but I defer to her wisdom in this regard. Yeah, I'm not bathroom guy. I'm not design guy. I'm not construction guy.
When we were also doing the renovation upstairs and we had this kind of a team of guys working, I mean, I'm the one that doesn't speak a word of Dutch. And
right.
he would still kind of talk to me. Uh-huh. And I was like, well, Vale, what did he say? Like, yeah.
Yeah, we should do that way.
So I think it was kind of, I think she was getting very frustrated and annoyed. But I think that's, the perception was that if he had to ask kind of a tough questions he should ask me, even if I wasn't clearly understanding what he was asking me.
Which I find it sort of humorous. I mean, I understand that historically that's kind of like whatever.
But yeah, I think that's your approach with humor. I mean, I was telling her, like, don't get frustrated. Come on, like, I don't care. I mean, like, who cares?
I think it's easier.
No, for sure. I understand.
If you don't experience that on a day-to-day, I think it's easy to say, understand. You know?
But I can imagine that in some contexts, then it's particularly annoying, especially work. Like in this condition, like at home, it was just like hilarious. That I mean, like he's asking stuff to me that I have no clue what he's asking. Like I didn't draw this stuff. Like I have no idea. Like I could have done it, but I didn't.
Right.
So yeah.
Right.
And then ultimately, I don't speak the same language, so there was also kind of another layer of complexity.
Yeah. That is also funny.
But you were asking, how do we introduce ourselves?
Yeah. What's your title, for instance, whether that matters or not?
I'm associate architect in the office. So, but it doesn't really matter. The majority of the stuff that I do in the office, they are more, when I introduce myself, at least I said that I work a lot with ephemeral architecture, meaning that a lot of temporary stuff. So I work in exhibition design, so like set up for exhibitions, quite a lot of interior design, mostly for retail, sometimes kind of small thing, but sometimes also larger.
Right.
With a lot of more temporary installations for fair or kind of, design week kind of installations, also, I don't know, set up for fashion shows.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of temporary things, but I get to do also a lot of things that they're very tangent to architecture. So we work with videos, we work with publications, we do books. And don't
you work with the Prada store?
Not necessary, no. I work with Prada for many years, but then, for example, we work on for them, like we do the set design for the fashion shows.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's a bit of a kind of a recurrent kind of project, which is also very unusual for an architectural office as a project, because normally you
do these things and break them down and then do them again. And
yeah, also kind of, but normally, I mean, there is a set of big differences, but it's also quite different to have a recurrent project, like something that you do every, I don't know, 3-6 months, and it's, let's say, a similar task, but then very different all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That then is going on. I mean, it's a collaboration that OMA started in to work on the setup for the shows in 2006. So it's kind of quite a unique kind of amount of project and kind of repetition of
sure.
the same project to some extent. But then, yeah, so that's the difference. And then the other difference is speed, because we work on this project like in a completely different speed and a completely different kind of parameters that you normally would have on when you design a building or you design a master plan.
Well, it sounds pretty fancy. The big question on the show is, I'm going to try to just get it out of the way. Do you feel successful? Do you feel that success is project-based, or is it like an overarching thing because you have a system of goals that you are or aren't reaching, or anyway,
I'm
stuff
not
like
so,
that?
I'm not so structured in my thinking and in kind of the set of things I do. I don't see necessarily kind of successful like as a career, but I think it's quite, I'm very happy with what I'm doing. It's quite fun, and I work on stuff that I enjoy. And that's also because I think as an ambition of would definitely kind of try to test myself a bit more out of a big office, which is kind of very fun and kind of make you have very big shoulders, because like you have like big clients, you have kind of a big infrastructure that allowed you and help you to do many things that normally when you are like a smaller firm, kind of a bit more poor and less renewed name, then of course you have to face way more difficulties and way more things. Mm-hmm. So that, of course, would be something that it's triggering. And also to test all the things that I've been doing this year to see how actually you could really do it yourself. Yeah. And then how you can also test yourself out of that context. And I think that would be very nice. But on the other hand, it's been quite fun. And there was a cost and growth in this year, meaning that kind of working with different clients, getting more responsibilities, getting more people working with me. So this has been kind of constantly kind of growing and constantly fun. Mm-hmm. And that also was super interesting for me to stay in the office and to sort of be in the office. And it's still kind of exciting. We normally have very long days. There is on my side at least quite a high commitment to my
and
work.
Dedication.
And dedication to whatever
passion
I do.
Also, because I think that's what the drive is in this case. Huh?
This all sounds like success to me. In that you are doing these things, you know, you're passionate about it.
Yeah, no, exactly. But then I always say that there is also, I work also with such a level of dedication, passion, and kind of commitment that the moment that I don't enjoy, I would definitely do something else.
Right.
Because it's not something that I do, I fulfill my time and go to work because I have to go to work. I really go to work, not that because every day is fantastic, but in general, I kind of, I enjoy it and it's kind of dynamic. I enjoy that I jump to one day do something, another day do something else, 2 hours of it do something else. A lot of traveling because also this project, they're global, so you're constantly around.
Sure.
You meet people, you work with different people. So I think there is a lot of different sides of the job that I really enjoyed. But then I always say to myself, like, okay, the moment I enjoy it, I would also be able to do what I'm doing because that would be kind of too frustrating and too heavy probably to sort of to do it in that way.
All right. I'm going to say that sounds like success to me. I like this whole networking and learning thing and enjoying what you're doing. I think it's fantastic.
But.
No, but. I think that you would be surprised if you did go out on your own. I mean, I think it would be difficult at first, but I think that you would catch on and it would be amazing.
Yeah.
How about you? I'm getting the vibe that you have more of a development mentality at the moment. Are you happy with what's going on?
Yeah, but I mean, when Julia was responding, I was asking myself, how do you measure success, right? Because that's a little bit the question I would.
Sure.
There's many things you can touch upon. I mean, is it success to work with a firm via DV and that's it? If that's how it's defined, then I don't think I'm successful yet. Because I've been successful achieving and getting this job, but I think there's much more to it within the firm. But actually, I mean, I get along a little bit with what Julio is saying by yourself. Can I be successful without being MVDV? Can I just engage in a conversation, describe what I do in few words without saying just, I'm an architect, I work in VADV, and still describe me successful, describe myself successful? I think that's what I'm maybe curious about at this stage. And then is successful money? I mean, there's many things that you touch upon. And I think in the profession we do, it's definitely not money.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you also want to gain for what you do.
Well, most of us do.
Yeah, well, because you need it. I mean, it's very important. But indeed, pursuing your passion, enjoying what you do, keep having the chance to challenge yourself.
Yeah.
That's what defines more successful in what we do than just earning money for yourself or just working or getting a job in a super cool firm, which is, of course, a big step.
Yeah.
And it's part of it. I mean, at least in my case, there must be more. There has to be more.
I think that's true in general, right? Like, it's like when you're in school, you apply to get into a program. And like that, you get into the program, that's success.
Yeah.
But then
what next? yeah, that's the thing.
You can't just be like, yep, I did it.
Yeah. I mean, it seems it's almost like it's a short time frame. I mean, success you achieve, but it's over by the end of the day.
Exactly.
In that sense, it's a development. I think I like that you interpret what I said so far, saying that you are in a development. Yeah. I mean, I really see it that way as well.
I think there is definitely a fascination on kind of going to work where you've been studying. I mean, I did an exam about OMA even without thinking that at some point I would ever work at OMA.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also working for these big firms, what is nice, I think, is like, also you compare it with maybe some of our friends, which maybe didn't get that chance, which they're still very successful in what they do and they achieve
but
a lot.
Maybe they were, or not maybe, they were not even looking for that chance in some cases. I mean, they were just simply happy to do other stuff.
Yeah, indeed. But in our case, let's say we got this job and then you see a lot of things happening. You see a lot of strong designer with strong ideas emerging and proving themselves. And that's the moment and you're like, oh, actually, that's what I want to do. And then you see the development after achieving the job. I mean, then that's the moment and it triggers a lot more appetite than just getting the job. That's, I think, one of the biggest, one of the nicest thing of being in this office is that you meet people, you see ideas, you see clients, you see opportunity, and you're like, wow, I want to see that themselves. And that's, I think that's a very nice part of being in this environment.
It's a bit of a port office in a way, because there are people coming and going, and then the people, they stay for quite a short amount of time. There are people that ended up a bit longer. But then it's quite nice that you also get to see people that maybe you've met like 10 years ago in some workshop and some activities, and then they come back because and maybe if they're not exactly in your office, they're in another office in the city. So in that sense, it's quite a dynamic environment, and it became really a, like a spot where people at some point pass by if you're in the architectural field.
And I think it should be as such. I think you should have this kind of job and keep it as such, like as a dynamic job where you meet people and have ideas and they're still inspiring. The moment that they're not anymore, you shouldn't be there anymore because you're not giving the best and it's not you're not gaining the best.
Right.
So.
Could you work together?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah?
Well, we learned it recently.
Well.
But we would not. Well, maybe some projects.
I'm very scared, but yeah.
When you say we learned recently, are you talking about the renovations on your house?
Yes. Okay. Yes, 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 indeed. Yeah, we thought we would never work together, but actually we're not that bad. No, okay. It's good, it's good. I think it could work. It's just that, yeah, we should not, I think.
I'm just curious, where do your skills and strengths overlap?
It's very clear. So that's why we became a power couple.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, like, if you guys get to the point where you're just like, all right, we're done with the big firms. Like, you could just start a small thing and you know, it's like you're already half of a firm.
Yeah.
Get some interns and you're off.
Yeah. We need a bigger house, though. But yeah.
But is that something that you've ever thought about or talked about?
No. Well, not seriously. Mm. Let's say we do small projects and we do it together. Yeah. So that's happening. And we hardly fight, I would say. I mean, a little bit, but not so much.
I'm just like, I come from a family where my parents have a business together.
Okay, okay.
And then
yeah,
I think it's one of the successful and the disaster of the family. So I think it's, I'm very skeptical about this kind of overlaps.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, indeed, we see that we could do things together and we're doing it. It's kind of, we have very different skills and we have very different interests on some things, but on the other, we're also very aligned on others. So in that sense, you see that they maybe could be some potentials, but yeah, it never really happened and it's never really been on the table. So let's see.
More like on a passion side. So let's say if you dream about, a few weeks ago, we were discussing, okay, what if you get this kind of big, super cool warehouse and you have your own lab and we do our own furniture and blah, 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 and we start dreaming about it. And of course, it's a shared dream, but it doesn't sound like a job. It doesn't sound like work in that sense. It's more like we like to do things together and design together, and that's nice and is working out. But if we think about a company and the complexity of a company, that's not, it hasn't been on the table yet. No, it hasn't been on the table. Then you never know.
Yeah, it seems like it would be a good personality match. You seem to have this quality that I have witnessed in other women in similar situations where, and I'm sure that it's not entirely the case, but you seem to have an ability to turn off the frustration with belligerent men. That's the vibe that I'm getting, at least.
Okay.
Other people who I know closely are not so good at that. and some are. And I've talked with different people about it, how they admire people who are able to just kind of go with that flow and either not manipulate the situation, but sort of bring the situation in a way that coddles the male ego. Now, is this something that you think about? Coddling the male ego?
Coddling the male ego is a... no, but it's true. I mean, it is true what you're saying, that it's that I'm not one of these feisty women which is like screaming like crazy and because things are not going right, because I don't think I achieve much out of it.
Well, that's the other side of the thing. Like, yeah. if it was a guy who was just like, no, fuck, no big deal. But if it's a lady, then it's bad.
Yeah.
And so you can't be that. But then you also know what needs to get done because you're a professional, yeah, and you know what needs to be done.
But I also recognize the capacity and the skills within the men partner, which is, in our case, let's say, I totally respect and I admire what Giulio does.
Uh-huh.
And that's why certain things I'm very happy to be together. I mean, there's sort of cliches which are very bad, and sometimes, well, women cliche, like, okay, you wear a ring, you wear makeup. I mean, all of these tiny things that you have to be careful about. And sometimes in our field you're like, well, you have to wear dressed up as a man, or
but
you do it, and then you frustrate yourself so much. So I'm like, okay, if you want to do it, because that's the way you get your things
if
done.
That's you.
And anyway, at some point it will be recognized that you've done a marvelous work, whether you were dressed up as a man or as a woman. It doesn't matter anymore. I mean, pick your battle. That's a little bit my...
Pick your battle.
That's a little bit my say. And I'm happy to be, when we do things together, or sometimes even if I go for, let's say, an opportunity, or, I mean, I'm saying a job interview is not a job interview. Maybe it's more like trying to get work or small projects for myself. I'm actually very happy and proud to go with him, for instance, because I know that he has a presence and it would make me stronger as a woman. But I don't feel embarrassed about it because I pick my battle. My battle is to get the project. And to do it marvelously, that's the thing. And I don't dwell, I don't do inside myself with this thing. So I think that's how I deal with the women in architecture situation.
All right. Yeah, I'm sorry if I'm harping on that or if it's obnoxious. But also another side to that dynamic. All right, you guys obviously had, in the beginning, you had these tests to your relationship with being in England, being in Russia, being here, and then you coalesced here in Rotterdam. But so what happens if one of you gets a big opportunity that needs to take you someplace else? Now, like, there are lots of factors.
We prepared for this question.
That's okay.
Exactly.
We prepared because it's been on the table a few times.
It has been on the table a few times.
But then we're still in Rotterdam.
So. Right. Okay. Right. So, all right. Tell me a story.
Julia.
No, I mean, I think... Without getting specific about stories. I mean, I think I moved here and then we've been apart for quite some time, even before I was moving here. And then it was inevitable moment to sort of, okay, what do we
grow
do?
Where,
like, let's unfocus for a second about our careers or what we're doing, and let's see how we can organize like more as a couple.
Yeah.
And then there was this moment of, okay, let's at least kind of, we should live in the same place, or how do we live in the same place?
Yeah.
And so that kind of was part of the story. Then it was different conversation and different, well, maybe situations. I don't think I was ever very fascinated from the idea of the UK in general.
Okay.
And also I think here, especially for this kind of idea of architecture and vibe of architecture, it's way more attractive and way more dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
So then, yeah, Vale had to sort of move, leave part of the life, leave part of the career, friends and so on, which they're not, I mean, they still come here and we see them. But of course, it was kind of a big of a shift, which initially was kind of lived with a certain frustration, and especially because of leaving behind some stuff, but also because of being the one that had to do
to give it up. And
a bit of jealousy. I mean, you can add on all of these bad feelings. I mean, I was living my life, I was leaving my friends, I was leaving money also.
Mm-hmm.
And I was coming here to a place which I loved, with a person I technically loved.
technically.
No, but that's the thing. It was also a test for us. So there was a lot of question mark.
Oh, okay.
He was in the place where he meant to be, you know, in this super cool IMA firm. And obviously I was like, what the fuck, what am I going to do now? And it took some time, but I think it was a very wise decision, to be honest.
Well, I mean, it seems to be working out. I mean, but from my perception, I don't even really know you guys. I barely know you guys. But I don't know if I didn't mention this yet. These guys live next to me.
Two doors apart.
Diagonally.
No, it was a wise decision.
No, but of course, that's a question that raised. And then when in the years there were other kind of...
Opportunities
and discussions. Okay, shall we go to Asia? Like,
right.
Shall we go like somewhere else? And then, but it was a bit like, you know,
I just moved. I did it. Yeah, but that was before.
No, to be honest, it's not true. I mean, it would be easy. I think it would be easy to sort of, if there is a nice opportunity and it kind of arrives and we want to do something.
I would fully support it. And I think he would do the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay.
And it has happened. I mean, when I moved to England, actually, I didn't know I would have moved to England. Didn't win anything yet. At that time, when he was applying for Moscow. So, of course, I was fully supporting the opportunity of him being in Russia without me, because that was not in my plan. It was not something that easy to achieve. It was not easy to move to Moscow. I mean, yeah, it's easy to move to UK. Well, now, not anymore.
Not anymore, unfortunately.
But Russia never was easy.
Yeah.
And I fully supported. And I think I would feel fully supported, support any of other opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
We had a situation which I did not support. I think I advised him in the right way, and it was not just in the interest of the couple. I think it was in the interest of his career, and I think I gave one of the best advice of my life.
All right. Well, that's very big of you.
I found interesting after the discussion of successful achieving and, you know, being happy and passionate about what we do, what were the pressure before when we were kids.
The parental pressure.
Right. Yeah.
I thought that was nice. I never thought about it.
No? Because why? Because you were just driven on your own, or like you just had an idea?
We did very normal schools in that sense. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Very normal schools. And my family, they're not into architecture at all. They're very inspiring people.
Yeah.
Life-wise, I must say. My mom, she studied statistics, but she works actually in a company and for a long time. And my dad worked for the telephone company in Italy.
Okay.
He was successful in his career. So within the company, he stepped up a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of pressure, but not in the creative industry at all. And I don't know why and how I actually ended up in architecture at all.
Did you like go to the library and look at books about it, or like did you just like buildings, or like what was just happened?
No, yeah, it just happened. I was on my mom's side, they all draw and they artsy people,
yeah,
but not by career. And I was actually very attracted to animals. So when I think the first job I dreamt about when I was a child, it was to be a vet.
Oh, yeah, that's a nice
But
one.
Then I realized that I was so scared of blood, but I realized it very early. So I stopped doing blood tests and anything related to doctors and medicine. And I said, that's really not my career.
Good move.
And since then, architecture. And we did also art lyceum. And even there, we chose architecture. So we chose architecture very early, now that I think about it. So when we were 11 already, we were kind of on the side of architecture.
Yeah.
And then university. And
if you're going to do it, you got to keep doing it. But what was your inspiration for starting with the whole architecture field?
Yeah, I don't know. I no one in my family is architect.
Yeah.
So that was also quite a new territory also for me. Yeah, it's quite an artistic family, I could say. Everybody works in art-related fields.
And strong craftsmanship.
Yeah, a lot of craftsmanship, yes, true. But
did you build stuff when you were a kid?
Yes, I built stuff. I also, when I arrived in the office, because my parents, they have a kind of, they have an antique shop, but they also have a lab where they restore antiques. So,
oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's kind of been always in a bit of a lab kind of craftsmanship kind of environment. And that was also fun because when I arrived in the office, which I was quite young and lost a kid
soul.
I didn't have much experience. I had experience working in small Italian offices, or kind of had experience working abroad, but never like in such a big office with so many people, like such a massive project and everything. So when I arrived, I was like really, really kind of a bit in shock of the whole things were happening around me. But then there is a fantastic model shop in the office where we build models.
I can imagine. It must be amazing, right?
Yeah, it's a very beautiful place. There is machines that I didn't know, but there were also a lot of machines that I was familiar with. Uh-huh. So I spent quite some months kind of doing models and kind of find my quiet spot in the model shop in the office to sort of get acquainted with many other processes. Yeah, but going back, there was not really an expectation, or there was not really kind of a defined path. I think I decided to go to an art school, which was not the favorite option for my parents. But at the same time, they strongly advised me not to do it, but yeah, they didn't kind of...
Whatever, it's your life, buddy.
Yeah. But they were also very happy for me to do it. And I think it was also the people around me, I think in the Lyceum, then we were doing this kind of architectural kind of classes and things. And then after high school, then you have to decide in which uni to go. Yeah, I thought it was kind of a good... In between, there was a lot of artistic kind of subjects, and on the other hand, also some more technical. So I thought that regardless what I would do, it would kind of become a good, let's say, cultural kind of field, and then that it kind of touched many different topics.
Sure.
So even without, I thought maybe it was a kind of a bit less specific than others, so that you don't really get a skill that you can do only one thing with that. But then it was quite a larger kind of a set of knowledge, and then you could have applied this differently on the future.
Mm.
And that in a way it's also what happened if I projected practically to what I'm doing.
Yeah, it's very broad, nice cultural general knowledge. What we studied in Florence compares to many other university, which they seem quite career driven and very specific, like you learn the skill that you need. So that never happened to us.
You learn a lot theoretically of many things that you could do. You learn, of course, some basics.
Right.
But then
the practical applications of
the whole practical dynamics and the whole practical things that you have to face, I think, is completely detached.
It's another,
which is maybe
it's
also
course.
It's valid for many other faculties and schools. Yeah, for us it was quite like, okay, the moment and you step in an office and there is kind of a lot of things happening.
Completely different from
you
what
need to
we did.
Basically re-educate yourself.
You start again.
Yeah. To get a different set of knowledge.
Yeah.
Right.
And sometimes some of the stuff you do were helpful, sometimes some others less helpful. But I kind of liked that it was broad.
I don't really have a lot of other specific work questions, but I do have a few questions. I don't know if you know this, but a lot of Americans tend to latch on to their European ancestry and strongly identify with it, whether they have any idea what it means to be Italian or Irish or not. I happen to be both ancestrally Irish and Italian, like many American mutts from the northeastern United States. As someone who grew up with vaguely Italian roots, I'm curious, what brand of pasta do you buy?
Rummo.
Here you can find Rummo.
That's you like that one better than...
Or Molisana.
That's the one that I've been buying.
Okay.
Molisana, it still has 100% flour, which is Italian. Rummo doesn't.
Okay.
I think if you're looking for being very patriotic, I think Molisana
is... No, it's not about patriotic.
No, on our side, I think. Like, if we are looking like... I think that's maybe the best. But Rummo has kind of a beautiful shapes pasta. That has this...
And the texture is very nice.
Yeah, okay. I think that Molisana doesn't have. But yes, and you can find it. I think when we came, it was a bit more difficult, but now you find it also in some...
And they used to send us the parcel with also the Rummo pasta.
Yeah.
But now it's very easy to find.
Right.
Yeah.
Architecturally speaking... Now, I looked this up on the internet. I was telling you before that I was looking at these things.
Shoot.
there are architects that people love and architects that people hate.
Mm-hmm. Who do you hate?
We don't need to go deep into this, but I'm going to just go into this list of architects that I quickly looked up, a list of hated and a list of loved. And then I want to see where you guys stand, and then I'll tell you if they're loved or hated. But you probably know already. I don't know who some of these people are.
Yeah, probably we neither. But let's
no, try. You do. You do. I'm sure that you do. I mean, they're pretty big names.
Okay.
They're pretty big names. For instance, Frank Lloyd Wright, love, hate.
I wouldn't have any reason to hate, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I mean, like, all right, so like, is there a particular building that you're fond of? Falling Water.
For him, like, no, yeah. Speaking about his work.
Yeah. Or do you not? I mean, you don't have to know the name.
Yeah, no. I mean,
I'm not trying to put you on the spot.
No, for sure. No, the Falling Water, for sure. I haven't seen it. I was thinking if I have visited stuff of him. I mean, the Guggenheim.
Guggenheim
is
definitely what you love.
Yeah, that's a big one. That's a big one.
And then also because we've been...
And he comes back in references and you use it a lot.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, he's on the list of loved. Le Corbusier.
Love. 100% love.
Just as a side note, Alice Friedman, the architecture professor at the school I used to work at, she would casually refer to him as Corb, as if she knew him.
No, we call it Corbu.
Okay.
Because we're Italian. We need the vowel at the end.
Like they're buddies, like they went to school together or something.
Yeah.
Robert Venturi.
Love.
He's on the hate list.
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
But he's the controversial guy.
He's
but of course.
Divisive.
Yeah.
Okay, here's another one. Okay, now you don't have to answer this. Rem Koolhaas.
Big love. Yeah.
Well, no, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, technically he's your boss.
He's also
on the hate list, which I was very surprised.
I guess because he's divisive. It is very controversial.
Yeah. It's also not like...
And not one of the most lovable architect in terms of the way he maybe. I mean, he's also a big Dutch man, which is like.
Is he large? I've never seen
him.
He's
taller than me.
Very tall. It's very serious.
Okay.
But definitely love. Well, it's part of the charm, right?
I mean, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I mean, he works for him. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I can't say things. It's
Does
fine.
He ever go to the office?
I mean, yeah,
a
for
lot.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah,
Does he live around here? Like, I don't even know.
He lives in Amsterdam, but.
Okay.
Is here. I mean, he travels quite a lot, but of course he's in the office. Yeah.
All right. Here's an interesting one because he's been responsible for, he's had different phases. Philip Johnson.
I don't think I love.
He's on the hate list.
But yeah, of course he's another kind of this critical figure. But of course it's love in the sense that he's kind of masterminding a lot of things that happen afterwards.
I learned about him in art history at MassArt and then, you know, everywhere else. All for Aalto.
Super big love.
Everyone loves him, right?
Yeah.
I mean.
And then, I mean, when you go and see it, it is
we've both traveled
mind-blowing.
In Finland to sort of visit as much as possible of as many as possible of his architecture.
So beautiful and so detailed, so accurate and so detached from where we are at the moment. I mean, this kind of side of Europe, and it is fantastic. When you open the door, you touch the handle and you get emotional. It's fantastic.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, very, very much love.
Okay. Frank Gehry.
Definitely less fascinating than all the names that you gave.
He is on the love list, and
yeah,
I kind of
sure.
expected him to be on the hate list, but I'm not sure.
But he's not such a controversial guy. I mean, he has a very...
He's fine.
He's got a brand.
He has very kind of strong aesthetic.
Yeah.
And kind of, as you said, a brand.
Yeah.
But he's... he's definitely not someone who's putting up like controversials or kind of a big statement.
No. Okay. Now here's one who I didn't know the name, but then I Googled him and I was like, oh yeah.
Okay.
Renzo Piano.
Yeah. Love.
Dude, it's amazing, right?
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
It's not the most fun architecture, but I think it's kind
very
of this
rigid.
High tech and high technological kind of stuff.
I feel like I'm familiar with his work because they use it in science fiction films or something. Like,
yeah,
I don't.
It's so precise.
It just looks like the future, like a utopian, or
but
a very clean
very
utopian future.
Traditional architecture in that sense.
Sure.
It's really like, we also got a lectures in the office from this guy, and he just talks a lot about the grid, which it seems banality, architecture grid, and. Structural grid and all the tiles align and all the columns align. It's like everything is so precise.
Mm-hmm.
What we do, it's more on a crazy side. So
it is. which I encourage listeners to look up. It's and I keep saying MVRDV because that's the Dutch way to say it. MVRDV. Just Google it and look at some of the buildings. They're really fun. And also OMA is the other firm. You got to look that up too. And you'll see a million articles about both of them because they do stuff all over the world. It's crazy. It's fun. I mean, just a couple more. Tadao! Ando.
Yeah, also love.
But we like everything. We're very easygoing.
Well, he's on the love list. Zaha Hadid.
I was waiting for that one.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think she's the only lady on here.
Yeah, I don't hate her. I don't love it either. I love the figure and what she represents,
yeah.
But I don't like what she does.
Okay.
Neither what people after her do.
Okay. She's on the list. She's the only lady on the list.
And you?
She's on the love side, I believe.
She is on the love side.
Yeah. Why not? I mean.
Yeah.
Why? That's an enthusiastic endorsement right there. This guy is passionate about Zaha Hadid. Gaudi.
Okay.
Antoni Gaudi.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, again, why not?
Why not? Like.
Yeah, why not?
I mean, some of the stuff are super fun. Not particularly beautiful, I would say, but super fun.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's masterpieces when you go Barcelona, like you go see
the. Of course. That's the one that everybody knows, right?
Exactly.
He's on the hate list. And
yeah.
I kind of expected him to be on the love list.
Yeah. Why on the hate list?
Why
he had this very sad
this?
Story
yeah,
when he died.
He was found in a metro station.
No, he was kind of hit by a car and nobody recognized him and he died on the street, something. And then he has a very sad story.
So bad.
And
he was
building a Sagrada Familia, like this massive kind of the cathedral in the city.
Yeah.
And then he died like not far from there.
His own city.
Yeah, yeah.
Like how could they
I think
not
he
know?
Had a very sad story. Maybe I'm kind of missing some part. But yeah, so that's why I'm surprised that he's on the hated
side. Yeah, he deserved to be loved. I mean, not.
Maybe he's hated because they didn't manage to finish the Sagrada Familia.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Still.
Right, yeah.
still under construction.
Yeah. Lazy bastard. Okay.
He was setting up the standard a bit too high.
Now, just a couple buildings. I'm going to start with this one because I am intimately familiar with it, and I don't think it's great. The Boston City Hall by Coleman McKinnell and Knowles. I don't know how well known this is. I know that it's just like a brutal box of horrificness. Anyway,
okay.
I hate it. It's on the hated list. Evidently, a lot of other architects hate it.
Hmm.
I had to ask it because I used to live in Boston.
No,
okay.
But we missed that geography there.
The Shard by Renzo Piano.
Cool.
Yeah, nice.
Cool, cool. Definitely cool.
All right, see, you keep saying, yeah, yeah. What's the one that's going to get you to be like, yeah, that's my jam? What's your jam?
Let me think about it. I don't want to be cliche. I would say a few OMA buildings, but then they're boring.
Okay.
The Hancock Building in...
Ooh, Louis Kahn. Why wasn't he on the list? How do you feel about Louis Kahn?
Also,
I mean, it's dope,
also,
right?
Dope.
He's not on the list. How come he's not? Oh, no, he is on the list. Sorry, I missed him.
But I don't think we've ever seen anything.
No.
In person.
In person, yeah. We've seen stuff of the other architecture you were mentioning.
We visited, well, we travel.
We travel a lot. But yeah, the John Hancock Building in Chicago. Or the Sears Tower in Chicago.
Yeah.
I think like this super beautiful tower.
Chicago's kind of like Rotterdam in the architecture sense, right? It's like kind of exciting and like groundbreaking. And, I guess the reasons are different, I suppose. Sort of like the invention of the skyscraper.
Yeah, I think that was also related to the destruction of the
city.
It was destroyed. I think it was a big fire. No, but in Chicago,
in
I think
Chicago,
there was a big fire.
The
and
big
then the
fire
kind of allowed
started.
Like a bigger rebuild. And
right.
I think here the destruction was
with Sullivan.
Was war.
Yeah. And it's a big chunk of history that we study also at school. And I think it was fascinating. And he got the chance to go and I was like, wow, I really want to go as well. Yeah, beautiful.
It is beautiful.
What other buildings do you have?
What other buildings? You want more buildings? Okay. The Walkie Talkie in London by Raphael Fignoli.
No, these I don't like, then I can say. Like,
okay.
Hate.
I'm not even sure I know that one. Which one is that?
It's a walkie talkie.
It's one
exactly
of these skyscrapers
in
the city. It's one of in the financial district.
Okay.
If you go to London, you'll see it because the shape is exactly how it's called.
All right. I'm not picturing it. Doesn't matter.
Well, it also means that it was not
remarkable. There is many buildings around there. Like, you're in the city. So
it's a tower.
So many towers.
Yeah. Can I just say that the first time Marlene was in the U.S. was on a student exchange in 2001. We visited New York and we were walking around. She really wanted to see the buildings, and she was disappointed. She was like, she thought they would be higher.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Wow.
Higher.
Does that surprise you?
Yeah.
She thought that the Empire State Building was not, it was, she thought it should have been taller.
Okay. We were impressed by the Chrysler building.
It's beautiful.
I mean, they're so impressive, but it's, yeah. And I the mean, concentration, and we, what is
you've
amazing
been recently,
in here.
But like, yeah. When we went, I remember so we went, it's like, wow. Yeah, but it was very familiar.
Yeah.
New York.
Of course, you see it in all the movies.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
you have this weird perception before. That you've been there and like, and you know everything. Like,
yeah. All right. There are a lot of Frank Lloyd Wright buildings on this. I'm going to skip most of those. I like them. They're nice. I mean,
nice.
What's not to like
it's
about
a good
them?
Architect.
Sydney Opera House.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah.
It's on the love list.
It's kind of this landmark that everybody knows and see. We haven't seen it, so it's hard to sort of see, but it's very iconic.
It is, for sure.
It's often associated with this image of this, how it's called, the drying dishes kind of rug.
Yeah, totally. It's the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Yeah, it's weird. It's from where we are, so why not loving it?
All right.
Yeah.
It's on the hate list.
It's on the hate list?
It is.
It's very tiny. Why would you hate it? It's such a small thing.
I mean, I don't know why you would hate it. I think it's cool.
Well, it looks big because it's in the middle of a field, but it's very tiny.
Right.
And cute.
Oh, speaking of being in the middle of a field, how do you feel about the Eiffel Tower?
Yeah, wow.
I love it.
Cool.
It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
I don't know why I like it so much, but I really, really like it.
And very important also. I mean,
yeah, well, besides that, just like when I see it, I get a little excited.
Yeah, it is exciting.
It's one of the things that you're very familiar with.
Maybe
like
that's why.
Kind of, it's always in the...
Since childhood.
Imagery of...
You can draw it as well.
You can draw it. Maybe that's what it is.
I think that's a nice bit of it. You can really draw it.
Yeah, I really like it.
Why?
Oddly enough. I'm not familiar with this. The Rugyong Hotel in Pyongyang, North Korea.
Oh, wow. It's this triangular building. Super cool.
Oh, yeah?
See?
All right. There you go.
You got excited?
I'm sure I've seen pictures of it then because I've seen...
Yes, yes. It's the only kind of big high-rise that you have in the city.
It's just funny that they threw a North Korean thing on there. Like, nobody's actually been to it.
It's quite a weird list. A lot of Frank Lloyd Wright.
Yeah, tons.
A Korean
it's
tower.
It's a crazy list. Yeah, like Mies van der Rohe, Frank Lloyd Wright, Korb, I.M. Pei. The Louvre Pyramid by I.M. Pei. How do you love it? You hate
love,
it?
Love, yeah.
It's nice, right?
I don't particularly love, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. No.
It's a bit boring.
What about the this is not a building.
Hmm.
It's more of a park experience. The High Line.
I think very exciting.
Yeah, it's very cool. I think it really changed a lot from the first time I was there to kind of now. I mean, now it's super, this high-end strolling kind of infrastructure.
I was only there in the beginning.
Fancy buildings around all the way.
Yeah.
By exciting as a principle.
All right. Thanks for being on the podcast, guys. I hope we found a groove.
It's very pleasant.
I hope you had fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks a lot for coming on. And
I think it was very nice.
I liked it too.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
We should eat some food.
Yeah, food time. Dun, dun, dun.
That was Valentina and Julio. What did you think of the power couple angle? The episode was a bit longer than what I wanted it to be, but they were two guests, so they both needed a little bit of extra time. I liked it. It was fun. I feel like they revealed some nice tidbits about what it's like to live with a partner who is just as driven and focused as you, and who in some sense is a colleague and in another, a competitor. I like how they acknowledge the feelings they have and the compromises they each make, but also how they integrate networking and their careers into their social and personal lives. These two happen to work in the same field, but the same dynamic can be seen in other relationships. My lady is lucky. Do you hear that, Marlene? If you wanted to pack up shop and move to a new location for a career opportunity, it wouldn't be a problem because I can podcast from anywhere. Anyway, Valentina and Julio are making solid names for themselves, and it sounds like their jobs are engaging and fun. They're also cool people and good neighbors. Thanks for being on the show, you two. I really appreciate it. By the way, I'll add a list of architecture-related names and/or firms from the episode in the show notes. Perhaps you want to look up some pictures or plan an architecture-themed trip in the future. Or maybe you just like reading lists. As always, I'd like to thank you, dear listener, for listening and downloading and interacting in any of the ways you can interact. If you feel like going to Apple Podcasts to leave a glowing 5-star review, that would be great as well. I'd appreciate it. Additionally, I'm at Feel Free to Deviate on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, and Facebook, if that tickles your fancy. And you can find a website at feelfreetodeviate.com. If you feel the urge to contribute financially, there's a donate page on the website, but you can also go to buymeacoffee.com/feelfree. That's just feel free, no deviations. It's a quick, easy, and painless way to help offset the cost of running the show while simultaneously keeping me caffeinated, which costs more than you might think. Episode 47, coming up in 2 weeks, will feature pop maestro Tom Sturm. It's going to be fun. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you or feel your digital presence in the future. Goodbye.